Welcome to Markets Plus, where we cover the latest market, economic, and business trends. I'm Alan Tannenbaum, CEO of BMO Capital Markets. Today, we have one of our most anticipated episodes, our quarterly investment and corporate banking market themes and outlook. As capital markets are at an interesting inflection point right now, we've invited Warren Estey, Head Investment Banking for Capital Markets, to share his expertise and perspectives on what we saw in Q1 and how things might play out for the rest of the year.
The views expressed here are those of the participants and not those of BMO Capital Markets, its affiliates, or subsidiaries. You can follow this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. For more episodes, visit bmocm.com/marketsplus.
Now here's Warren Estey with Kim Hansen, Head of B2B Thought Leadership at BMO.
Hi, this is Warren Estey, and as Alan mentioned, I lead the investment bank at BMO Capital Markets. This is our inaugural investment bank podcast, which we plan on bringing to you quarterly. It'll cover various topics and market themes which we believe will be of interest to you, our clients. Today, I'm going to discuss what we saw across markets in Q1 and what we're seeing developing throughout the rest of the year.
Thanks, Warren. Looking forward to it. Let's get started.
Absolutely. So overall, as I think about the macro environment, I'd say it's opaque with a lot of crosswinds. Think about the evolving central bank policy. Think about uneven global economic growth. Think about the wars in Ukraine and Gaza and now potentially Iran. Think about the broad geopolitical tension in the East and the West. And then you throw in the upcoming U.S. presidential election. That's a lot for investors and leaders of businesses to digest on a daily basis. And yet, in the first quarter, we saw the Dow was up 6%, the S&P was up 10%, NASDAQ up 9%. We saw equities volatility down at 13, which is its close to five-year lows, and U.S. Treasury volatility was at a post-COVID low.
And so why is that?
You know, I really think a number of reasons. We've got a market that fundamentally is leaning into Fed cuts, though what I would say, and as we've seen over the last few days, it's recalibrating when and how many of those we're actually going to get. We've had resilient economic data that is leading investors to this, you know, quote unquote, soft no landing scenario. But we are also pushing out when those rate cuts are going to happen and how many ultimately. So fundamentally, I think it's really a market that's being driven by earnings recovery over the last couple of years and the earnings calendar and the PE multiple expansion that we have seen over the last 6 months play out is really playing out. I would tell you though that in talking to our traders, they really feel as though it's a relatively short-term market. It's a market that is reacting to data on a minute-by-minute, day-by-day basis. And I think you only have to witness the explosion of single-day options contracts as an example of that and how they are expressing their desire to invest in this market. So, look, overall, markets come and go and move up and down on a daily basis, but I would say that it's a market that's actually positively biased. I'd say it's accommodative. And for the capital markets, and that's equity capital markets, debt capital markets, M&A, the products that enable companies to finance themselves and grow. So for the capital markets to work, we don't need a market that is making new highs every day. We need one that is characterized by lower volatility so investors can price securities appropriately. Boards can bid on assets confidently, and each can do it with a sense that the deal will get done or they will be able to acquire the asset. That's the type of environment that we've seen to begin develop in 24, and which is why I'm relatively optimistic.
Okay, that's really helpful. What about equity capital markets?
So in the U.S., you know, in the first quarter of 24, we saw over $75 $1 billion of deals get done over 181 transactions. That's volume that's up 110% and deals, you know, number of deals up 44%. In Canada, we saw $5.4 billion of deals get done over 54 deals. And so that's volume up, you know, 45 plus percent and deals up 41%. You know, it's been a really healthy market. So we've clearly seen, certainly in the U.S., a reacceleration in 2024. And I would say particularly actually in follow-on transactions. And the majority of that activity can broadly be categorized, I would put really into two groups, sponsor and corporate monetizations and life science financings. On the sponsor corporate monetization side, you know, we really saw private equity investors and corporates who held shares of public companies, they took advantage of the market backdrop to sell down significant positions this quarter. These secondary offerings accounted for about 60% of total follow-on proceeds, but only 36% of the total number of deals. So they were generally larger, chunkier deals, which is great to see those getting executed. I would say, interestingly, about 25% of secondary transactions have included companies buying back their shares from sellers as a portion of the offering, which enabled underwriters to create meaningful order book tension and ultimately better outcome for sellers. The second point I mentioned, life science financings. And I would say thanks in part to a fairly material boost in big pharma M&A activity at the end of 23 and the beginning of 24, the US ECM market saw a resurgence of biotech financings, and that accounted for approximately 50% of the total follow-ons to date. And I think, you know, most encouragingly, those follow-ons were a highlight in and of itself. They returned about 22% average across those transactions. So really a highlight and something to continue to watch. In Canada, we really saw two big themes drive the market. First was energy, which represented about a third of all new issuance in Canada, and M&A, which was a really material driver of new issuance. And all you got to look at is Pembina's $1.3 billion offering or Crescent Point's $500 million deal as good examples of M&A-driven equity issuance. Back to the U.S. in the IPO market, you know, we have really seen a steady reopening there. 14 deals priced for nearly $7 billion in proceeds in the first quarter. And I would say that the market really has proven dynamic across sectors and uses of proceeds. The industries that were represented in the IPO market included real estate, consumer, technology businesses, in addition to seven deals from the healthcare sector. We saw really a wide range of trading performance, which really underscores the nuances of the current market and how the second quarter is going to be critical. Deals need to perform well to ensure the growing health of the market overall. I would tell you that, importantly, the forward pipeline really looks good. It's very broad-based, and specifically for BMO, we're going to be really active in real estate, insurance, industrials, healthcare, and energy transition. In the U.S. equity-linked market, you know, that market really had a nice start as well. And we had a really diverse mix of corporates that were driven to that product for a number of company-specific reasons, but a clear driver was the high unsecured debt costs that they were facing from other products. Convertible offerings year-to-date raised in excess of $16 billion across 24 financing, and 10 of which were active in the tech sector. So a very resurgent market on the equity-linked side as well. So I would say that the takeaway for the U.S. equity-linked market is that it provided alpha as an asset class for investors in the first quarter. And so we really expect that momentum to continue to build. In Canada, you know, clearly activity is slowly returning to normalized levels, but I would say for my Canadian colleagues, in a still frustrating way, IPOs are unlikely to be prominent until later this year or into 25. And we would also expect M&A-driven equity issuance plus secondaries to be major themes.
Okay, and what about debt capital markets?
In the U.S., we closed the first quarter at $540 billion of issuance, which is up 34% year over year. And that far exceeds previous records and market expectations. The only first quarter that got close to that, to the $500 billion mark, was in the first quarter of 2020. But that was really only because of the COVID rush kind of kicked in there. In Canada, we had about $38 billion of issuance, which was up close to 60% year over year. And both markets, I would tell you, the issuance was roughly split, call it 50% financial institutions and 50% corporates. I would tell you that there are a number of drivers to that, probably four in my mind. In the U.S., increased M&A activity has been a key driver of that supply. The second would be credit spreads, you know, on both sides of the border have moved meaningfully lower since late October, call it 100 basis points in the U.S. and 55 plus or minus basis points in Canada. And that really incentivized issuers to step off the sidelines and take advantage of conducive market conditions. The third would be fundamentals. And I would say that those remain strong with corporate balance sheets very healthy, ongoing inflows into corporate fixed income investment mandates, and strong secondary performance, that all fueled ongoing demand for new issue across the entire credit spectrum. And the fourth would be the potential volatility in the back half of the year given the U.S. elections and the resulting execution risks really caused some issuers to pull forward refinancing activities that they had initially slated for later in the year. I would point out probably two to three really interesting things on the IG market. First would be, you know, as we think about the following the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank in March of 23, general risk appetite for deeply subordinated bank capital saw a dramatic decline. And this segment of the market laid, you know, really dormant for most of the year. 2024 marked the broad return of these structures both in Canada and the U.S., demonstrating the resilience of the IG bond market and investor confidence in the financial sector, I think, in general. You know, I would tell you as an example, you know, BMO Financial Group, we issued our inaugural U.S. LRCN in February for $1 billion, which really saw great support from a broad set of investors and strong pricing, which moved, call it 42.5 basis points from initial price talk to land at 7.7%, which we were really pleased about. Second point I'd make is that, you know, we recently led an inaugural Maple transaction for NextEra Energy. And that transaction paves the way for other U.S. utilities to follow suit, which I think alongside the potential Maple index inclusion currently being contemplated, that's going to act as a real tailwind for more Maple supply as we look ahead. And we feel as though we're really uniquely positioned to take advantage of this trend with a seamless partnership between our U.S. and Canadian platforms. And then the third thing I would say is that Canadian borrowers continue to look to the U.S. market to diversify their borrowing base. They've had very good experiences year to date, and we think that that trend is going to continue. So as I think about the outlook for debt capital markets, I would say that, you know, supply expectations for the remainder of 24, I would say they're slightly tempered given the robust activity that we've seen year to date. But so far, issuance continues to surprise to the upside. So we feel great about that.
Thank you, Warren. That's a really thorough overview. Moving to an area where we're seeing activity pick up, leverage finance. Tell me more about what you're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. Leverage finance has been a clear highlight in 24. So let me just throw a few headlines out at you. You know, Term Loan B issuance, $142 billion, one of the 10 busiest quarters of all time. High yield issuance, $85 billion, strongest first quarter since 2021. The LSTA index ended the quarter at 96.7, and average price of new issues was 99.6. And the high yield index ended the quarter at 7.7, with spreads approaching about 300 basis points. So I would tell you, Kim, that that is the strongest market that we've seen in the last 24 months. And it gives investors and issuers an opportunity to reprice, extend, recapitalize, do acquisition financing. Literally everything was on the table in the leverage finance market in the first quarter of 24. A couple themes, call it four themes, stand out for me. First, the recent elevated secondary levels for loans and bonds, coupled with increased investor appetite for risk, that's really giving borrowers an opportunity to refinance at better rates, as I mentioned. The majority of the volume in the leveraged finance market year to date has been opportunistic. So again, the aforementioned repricings, refinancings, extensions, call it 63% of the volume has been earmarked for refinancing, which is the largest level in, call it 11 years. And LBOs and M&A financings have made up, call it 20-25% of the year-to-date volume. And I would say that that's more of a function of the logjam in sponsor exit activity than anything else. And I think encouragingly, CLO issuance is up 40% year over year, with investors looking for opportunities to put new money to work across the credit spectrum there. The second theme I would point you to is that with the M&A market on a gradual growth path, which I'll touch on later, borrowing costs continue to drop and the IRR math for sponsors improves, right? And we expect a resurgence of sponsor activity in the back half of 24. We're already seeing a growing uptick in activity from this set of clients. And as I think about the opportunity set that they're looking for, you know, they really remain focused on high quality cash flowing businesses, names and sectors like enterprise software, insurance brokerage, and tech-enabled services. The third theme I would talk about would be private credit. And private credit, you know, continues to be relevant and a relevant alternative to syndicated financing, period, full stop. It's not going anywhere, and especially for our sponsor clients. And although private credit has taken market share from the broadly syndicated market in years past, I would say that we have recently seen a reversal back to the traditional leveraged finance markets. Lower spreads and a healthier ARB have put liquid loan investors back in the driver's seat for now, with record CLO creation year to date, as I just mentioned. And I think also encouragingly, year to date in 24, 27 companies have issued broadly syndicated loans to refinance almost $12 billion of debt previously provided by direct lenders. So something that's going to continue to play out going forward. And the last thing I would talk about is that as markets have recovered and new money opportunities for investors remain limited, we have seen a resurgence in junior capital in the form of senior unsecured notes and second lien term loans, which we do believe is going to continue. So the outlook for leveraged finance, I would say, you know, historically speaking, in the last three election cycles, we've seen both loan and bond issuance increase materially in the months of September and October of election years versus the same months in non-election years. Loans tend to be flat in November, but bond issuance is higher by an average of about 12%. In equities, it's a mixed bag. In 2012, issuance slowed into the election but then picked up. In 2016, issuance was steady, and in 2024, issuance only increased following the election. So I would tell you that we believe the leveraged finance market, given where it is now, given the activity, given the players involved, we think it's going to be a really an active market going into the fall.
Yes, I'd agree with that. Great. Thanks for that. Warren, switching gears to M&A, what are we seeing there and what can we expect moving forward?
In the U.S. M&A market, we spent a lot of time, market participants have spent a lot of time talking about how bad the M&A market was in 22 and in 23, et cetera, et cetera. But in 24, we've really seen a resurgence. Volumes up almost 60%, you know, again, off easy comps of 23, but it is up. Energy, technology, financial institutions are driving most of the increase in that deal activity. And I would tell you that large cap M&A is back. We've already seen, call it a dozen, $10 billion plus deals this year. Think about Capital One Discovery, names like that. I would say, you know, encouragingly, corporate deal activity is up, call it 80% year to date, as balance sheets are generally strong and acquirers can realize synergies in strategically enhancing transactions. And sponsor activity is up as well, almost 20%. Still a bit muted, it's still on the come, but we're encouraged by that. It's made up of, call it, you know, 27% of total deal activity year to date. When you compare that, it generally should be around 30%. You've still got a relatively challenging fundraising environment, but we do think, and I'll talk about it in a bit, we do think that that client base is going to continue to be increasingly active throughout the year. So M&A themes, I think I'd give you five, right? M&A valuations have come down from the 2021 peak, although, you know, limited data points involved scale assets are really kind of available, and that's, you know, LBOs have been impacted by higher interest rates and lower leverage. The debt paydown math doesn't work anymore at 6 to 7 times leverage. We are still seeing examples of premium outlier valuations for very high quality businesses. You know, the market is seeing a flight to quality. Think about First Advantage and Sterling Check. Think about Arcline and Command. Think about EQT Infrastructure and Heritage Environmental. Those are all mid to high teens valuations. And I would tell you, you know, conversely, that the lower quality assets really have been hit harder. The second theme I'd talk about is that transaction structures are going to continue to be a key tool to bridge buyer and seller expectations, specifically on value. And there have been a number of rollover equity, minority stake deals, structured equity that we have seen this year. Think about Koch Industries and CPM, where there is a structured equity investment. Think about Platinum Equity and USLBM, where there is a minority stake. Think about TorQuest and Bad Boy Motors, where there was a full sale process where the seller rolled a significant stake in the company. Those are all examples of how people are being creative to get a transaction done. Encouragingly, as we've seen with the experience of our clients, corporate strategic dialogue really remains very robust, with a range of transactions and situations commanding headlines, I would say. We've had public to private deals from sponsors like KKR and Apollo and CD&R and Thoma Bravo. We've had unsolicited and hostile deals. Think about Vista Outdoors or Macy's or U.S. Steel or Choice Hotels and Wyndham. And I would say that, you know, companies have to and are laser focused as they think about their business portfolios and maximizing shareholder value as they're going forward. And that is how they are defending themselves against these hostile or unsolicited bids. The fourth is a fairly challenging one, and that's the antitrust environment. And I would say that we believe it's going to get stricter. So last July, the DOJ and the FTC issued draft merger guidelines, and the final guidelines, which were released in December, they were only slightly watered down. You are going to see more focus on consolidation trends as opposed to one specific transaction, and you're going to see more scrutiny on private equity roll-ups. Think about JetBlue and Spirit. Think about Kroger's and Albertsons. Think about Amazon's acquisition of iRobot. And whatever the outcome of the election, we do not expect any major relaxation in the antitrust environment going forward. We think it's going to be very challenging and one that management teams and boards are going to have to deal with on an active basis as they think about their strategic alternatives. And the fifth point I'd make is the pipeline. The pipeline of building assets we really feel great about. We've seen a notable uptick in businesses coming to market later in 24. It's a good mix of size and industry. And there's a long list of busted auctions from 22 and 23. And we think many of those are going to be coming back to market later this year as the market improves. So what do I think about the M&A market overall? Look, I expect that we're going to have an up year in 24. We haven't seen, you know, three consecutive down years in the last 30 years. Doesn't mean it can't happen, but I'm optimistic. The headwinds that curbed deal making in 22 and 23, whether it's the rapid increase in borrowing costs, recession concerns, declines in equity markets, all of those have eased, right? Today, corporate confidence is recovering. Economic data and growth has actually held up, as I mentioned earlier. Equity markets have rallied in general. High yield bond issuance is up. Corporate cash levels have remained high. All of those things are great for M&A. They are drivers of M&A activity. So I would say that risks remain, but markets and confidence have been resilient despite a lot of the uncertainties that I mentioned at the start of the program. And we think that the animal spirits, quote unquote, those are going to continue to build. Strategics are proactively reviewing their alternatives, and they're considering preempting upcoming auctions. Sponsors have and are using a wide variety of tools and creativity and aggressiveness in deploying their capital. And ultimately, the lower volatility environment that we are experiencing, that is increasing the confidence on both sides of the table that valuation expectations can be met and a transaction can be completed. So we feel great about that.
Thank you, Warren. That was a very insightful analysis. You covered all the bases. Anything else you'd like to say around the quarter that was or where we're headed?
Yeah, look, as I think about where we're headed, we're just a couple days into spring. And spring is a time when there is more light in the world than darkness. And I think that's a great metaphor for how we at BMO Capital Markets see the opportunity set for our clients for the rest of 24.
Thank you, Warren. What a great way to end. And we look forward to hearing more about Q2 when we speak to you next. Thank you.
Thanks, Kim.
Thanks for listening. You can follow this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. For more episodes, visit bmocm.com/marketsplus.
For BMO disclosures, please visit bmocm.com/podcast/disclaimer.